Blog Talk Radio.
Reach out and touch.
And welcome to the Antique Show. I'm your host, the marvelous and dashing Push Nevada, and today we'll be talking with Peggy Warner, who's a direct descendant of the Gist settlement. She's going to tell us about the settlement, which was settled in 1810 near Ripley, Ohio, and the upcoming commemorative event, which is to take place on August 14th. So let us welcome Miss Peggy Warner to the show. Peggy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for welcoming me to the show. I wanted to tell you about the settlements, the three settlements that Samuel Gist, that would be the Hargee, settled in starting in 1819. Two of them were in Brown County, and one of them was in Highland County. The total of over 2,000 acres of land was given to freed slaves.
Okay, but first, tell us a little bit about yourself first. Who is Peggy Warner?
Well, I'm the sixth generation of slaves that came here and took the name of Toler, T-O-L-E-R. My great-great-great-grandmother came here and was given 37.5 acres of land. She brought with her four children, one of them my great-great-grandfather.
One of the things I thought was interesting about the Gist settlement is that he was an Englishman, of course, and he moved to America to make his fortune, and he actually, it seems that he settled the area for free slaves, either some kind of legal tug-of-war with his daughter?
Yes. Actually, he didn't just move to America to make his fortune. He was brought here as a poor boy, kind of like the Oliver Twist boys. He was taken off the streets of England, the books say. And then
like an indentured servant or something?
Yes. And it came here because they didn't want the boys just hanging out on the streets.
Right.
And he and some others were brought here to the John Smith plantation, which he eventually owned. And that's how he received his fortune, sort of like George Washington, who married Martha Custis. Samuel Gist married John Smith's widow and inherited everything.
Okay, so tell us, if you can, a little bit about the situation with his daughter.
Well, it appears that Samuel Gist didn't care too much for America at all. He didn't stay here very long. Some history books say that he was never here, that he just owned land holdings here. But it is true that he was here and married and had two daughters. But he went on back to England after a short time in America. But his daughters evidently had some loyalties to America, because the oldest one, Mary, married an American sea captain named William Anderson. And in marrying a sea captain from America behind her father's back, her father didn't want her around. He just kind of like disowned her. And so she was banished to America on this land that Gist did own. And this is where she lived with her American sea captain, William Anderson, until William Anderson passed away. Then she married someone else, because really the only way back then for women to have any kind of land or belongings at all was to marry. They couldn't own land or vote or anything. So Gist, having two daughters, they really didn't stand to inherit any of his land either. They just were to marry well. That was their lot in life. But that's how that's what you asked me about, was his older daughter.
So I know that Leslie is a descendant of the settlement as well, and yourself. Are there any other people, families that you know of, other descendants that you're aware of?
Well, we have many surnames that we're researching, like the Johnsons, the Joneses, the Smiths, the Burrs, the Jerrisons. Strange name, isn't it? Fountain is a last name also. There's probably about 50 surnames that we are, that these slaves came and took the names off. So we're researching their family. Lucas is one also.
And those names are descendants of the Gist settlement.
Correct, because they are recorded on the document in Brown County as having been given land from the estate Samuel Gist.
Okay, so what is the commemorative event going to be about?
Well,
it's a marker.
Yes, for about 10 years now, we've been trying to gather information, get people together, tell the story, get it publicized. In 2003, we put one marker up in one of the settlements. Remember, I said there were three settlements. In 2009, we put up a second marker. And now, in 2010, August the 14th, now coming up in a matter of about a week, we will be putting up the final marker marking the three settlements that we know of. Now, if there are any others, we have more work to do in finding the other settlements. But we believe, upon reading and going through research, that there were only three that stayed. There's some talk that there was another one, another settlement that went north, but they were disheartened and couldn't seem to stay, so they came back to Virginia. That's what we're told.
Now, the Gist settlement actually played a vital role in the development of the Underground Railroad.
Well, I think all free black settlements did. I think they all were utilized and probably equally helped, although we don't have research to tell us that, but we have some oral history that tells us that many of them were hidden there and used to get north. So that I do believe the Sardinia Eagle Township Gist settlement, the second one that we put the marker in, is known to have been on the main route out of Ripley, Ohio. And of course, Ripley, Ohio has a lot of notoriety being on the Underground Railroad. So that route, we know, was a direct route past the settlement, so we suspect that settlement was used there, and possibly the others too, because they all knew each other, and they all helped out each other, because 1819 was so far ahead of the Civil War and the Emancipation Proclamation that these people had to work together. There was no other way to really survive. Nobody wanted them to be free. They were to be slaves.
So on the settlement, were they slaves? Were they And was there ever a time when they were slaves?
Not unless they were slaves of each other. They were given plots of land, some as big as 80 some acres, others as small as maybe 8 or 9 acres. The Underground Railroad Freedom Center in Cincinnati believes that those amounts were proportioned out to the families. Families that were bigger got more acres. Maybe a single male or a single woman got the smaller acreage.
Mm-hmm. So what were their lives like? If they owned land and they probably planted and cropped and everything. What do you know what their lives, what life was like on the settlement for these descendants, for the
some
people?
Some of the Brown County history says that they were very disliked and not well cared for at all.
Can you speak up a little, please?
Yes. Some of the research that we've done in Brown County shows that these slaves were not well-liked, were not cared for, and that the land was very poor that they were given. In fact, this land might have been some of the poorest farmland that was out there. They were taken to Ohio instead of being in Virginia. You know, Gist's main idea when he wrote his will was that his slaves be left in Virginia. But they weren't allowed to do that. So they were brought to poor land in Ohio, and I don't think that it was easy for them at all. My roots, the Toler family, my mother's side of the family, they stayed and were farmers on the land. My grandfather, that I knew very well, was a well digger and built many houses in the Gist settlement. So they really had to work by the best way they could. It wasn't an easy life for them.
Now, you said your family's name was Toler. Where did they come from? How did they arrive at the land, and why didn't they take the Gist name?
Well, we have done a little bit of work that tells us that the plantation steward or the plantation manager of Samuel Gist's name was Benjamin Toler. And he had a son who did business for the Samuel Gist estate. His name was Matthew Toler. And we believe that this is where our Toler name came from. Either we were owned by the Toler family, left as a debt because Benjamin Toler had died by the time the slaves were freed. He may have owed debts to the estate and had to pay off in his slaves. They could have been interrelated and allowed to go. I read somewhere that some of the slaves who came with the over 350 slaves that were brought here in the first group that came, well, some of them were allowed to come because they were either related or closely associated with these slaves. So,
okay. Well, tell me, what is the Virginia connection to the Dismal Swamp?
As far as my history does, I'm not a history major or anyone who knows awfully lot of history, but I have read in the Rouster book, The Fabulous History of the Dismal Swamp Company, that was sort of a business operation that George Washington and his business associates dickered around with, buying and selling land in the swamp, having slaves hidden out in the swamp, doing different things that probably some of them weren't even very legal in the Dismal Swamp up and down that eastern coast. And that Samuel Gist, being a business associate of George Washington, dealt with this swamp land. And it might have been, the land in Ohio might have been part of that packaging of swamp land that they were wheeling and dealing with. Don't know.
Okay. Speaking of legal issues, were there ever any court cases brought by black settlers, particularly with the legal situation between Gist and his daughter?
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, they argued there's quite a lot that went on there because I guess if it hadn't been for Mary and her sea captain husband Anderson, Samuel Gist probably would not have been able to keep his Virginia land because, as you know, during the Revolutionary War, which we're that after time of the Revolutionary War, Loyalists, which is exactly what Gist was, their land was being taken away from them. So the Anderson family living there, I guess they weren't quite sure whether they owned the slaves or Daddy owned the slaves. You know, they're dead, so their arguments went back and forth. And then when Anderson died in his 50s, not an old person, but maybe medium old for that time, then there was a lot of lawsuits that the Anderson family, on behalf of their dead son, sued back and forth the Gist people with. So that absorbed an awful lot of money because of the lawsuits and how much it cost to get legal assistance and everything. And it wasn't until 1831 that the last group, having all the legal debts solved as much as they could and paid off, the last group came to Ohio, to the Highland County settlement in 1831. They were given 207 acres. Not as large settlements as the first two were in 1819, but the end of the Gist settlement.
Okay. I hear you talking a lot about the history and what you have come to know. What kind of research have you done on the settlement? Where is it coming from? Do you go to libraries, archives? How do you come across the information?
All of the above.
Okay.
Am particularly fond of the Royster book, The Fabulous History of the Dismal Swamp Company. Also, there's Migrants Against Slavery by Professor Schwartz from the University of Virginia, and he certainly has been a good advisee to me. He has called, and I have called him several times about the history he's come up with. He had a doctoral student named Michael Trotty who did a doctoral dissertation paper on this very Gist settlement. And Fergus Bordovich, in his book, has the title escapes me right now, but Fergus Bordovich's book has something about the Gist settlement in it. Anne Hagedorn, Beyond the River, was written about quite a lot of abolitionists. She speaks of the Gist settlement, and one of the ladies from the Eagle Township settlement who was taken and denied that the townspeople denied that she was a freed slave because they couldn't produce their papers for her, and she was put in jail in Kentucky for a length of time until the abolitionist John Mayhem was able to, and John Rankin, of course, were able to get her out of jail, and she was a resident of the Gist settlement. So they did come into the people that wanted to cause them problems came into the settlement from time to time and did stir up some trouble. But my history comes from basically those sources and newspaper articles, many, many newspaper articles.
Yeah, I've noticed on Leslie's website, she's got a lot of newspaper clippings from, I think there's even one from 1920, and I was just wondering where the information is coming from. Is the Gist settlement in the history books, and how people can go and read about it, and other
not
scholars?
Not well enough, but it is there. I ran across even a fictional book this man was a bounty hunter, called Soul Catcher. And it's just written with some history throwback, but it's a fictional book about this guy who was a bounty hunter and hired to find slaves. And he fell in love with this slave woman, and it's mentioned in the end of the book that he's going to take her where she'll be safe back to the Gist settlement. And I thought, gee, we got mentioned even in a fictional book. That's wonderful. John Parker, you know, the great abolitionist from Ripley, Ohio, he mentions the Gist settlement. He calls them the three colored camps. And keep in mind that Ripley was the closest town for the two Brown County settlements. So Parker, working in Ripley and being a businessman in Ripley, could speak of them. He felt they were, in his autobiography, he says they were very unsuccessful, which disappoints me a little, except that I believe that he's measuring success by his success. You know, he owned his own business, was responsible for 3 patents that not many African Americans had back in that time. In fact, there were only 75 during the Parker era patents from African Americans. So the success of the workers in the guest settlement couldn't measure up to John Parker. But I do think, as an abolitionist, he might very well have used people from the guest settlement or even the guest settlement to further people up north, as was his job as a conductor on the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of archaeological work going on in any of the settlements?
No, we really do need to fund that some way. But our first effort was the markers, because we do not want those people to be forgotten. And I can't tell you how many people, just with the markers, are going, "What? Never heard of it."
Right.
So it is bringing some people looking up things. You know, it's motivating people to look up things.
So the commemorative event should be pretty big. Has it been publicized on, I don't know, TV or the newspapers?
We have sent spots to every TV station, all of the major newspapers here in Cincinnati area and into Adams County, which is our county on the eastern side, and into Clinton County, which is on the north, and of course we're right down here by the Ohio River. And we have tried to send word back to Richmond, because there was a reporter 7 or 8 years ago who did come out of Richmond hoping to piece this whole thing together, the Richmond to Ohio story, and she did quite a nice article at the Richmond Times and Dispatch. It's in the archives and has our pictures and everything of many of the descendants. I think there's maybe probably 50 or 60 faces in that article.
Okay, so is this the first of the commemorative events on the Gist settlement? Has there been any others?
There have been 3 other markers put up, and there has been a gathering every year except 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Once a year, we have it the third Saturday of July, and it's announced where it will be, because we don't have a standing place where we have it all of the time. We have it wherever we can gather the most people and have it once a year. Third Saturday of July. It's been going on for about 10 occasions now, 10 years.
Okay, so the commemorative event, which is going to take place pretty soon, why should people even be interested in attending the event?
August 14th, 12 noon, in Georgetown, Ohio. Why? Because many of us feel like, this happens all the time, people say, "Well, my grandfather was from Arkansas." Your grandfather may have lived in Arkansas, but you really don't know where the rest of your family is from. We're talking 5, 6 generations, and it's a way that people can piece together and connect their family roots and find out how people did it who have already done connecting their family roots, and then hear a great piece of African American history. This Gist settlement is one I have not read of any larger relocation of slaves paid for by the master, released and freed in the history of America. Mr. Jefferson was able to free some of his slaves. I think Washington freed some of his slaves, but nobody to the tune of 350 slaves set free but Samuel Gist. And so this is a very, very great American story, no matter what color they were.
Right. Are there any white Gist descendants, and will they play any kind of role in the commemorative event?
We haven't located any, but we put this in the paper. Anyone subject to showing up just like Leslie contacted me, there could be anyone who could show up. I mean, any color of the rainbow. Because you know how, as slaves, they were treated and the things that we are turning up now as descendants of slaves. And mm-hmm. these people were slaves for many, many, many years. So if, mm-hmm. if possible, we have not had anyone show up yet. But anything is possible. I would not be surprised at all. Wouldn't even bat an eye.
Okay. So where, what happens after the commemorative events? Do you think there probably, I'm sure this will change the history of the area and how historians look at the area, but are there any talks of books, perhaps, from particularly anyone in the whole gist reality?
I have not heard of anyone except Leslie and Ann Hagedorn. I did speak to Ann Hagedorn before she did include the gist in her Beyond the River. I would suspect that since we have the three markers now that are very vivid and very there, that it will be more of a focus of a literary things now because mm-hmm. it was just talk before these visuals came. And now these mm-hmm. are visual markers. So it's become fact because you cannot put up historical markers without the facts being researched. The Ohio Historical Society helps you and documents everything and footnotes mm-hmm. it. I mean, it came from sources. So I would suspect now that we have these visuals that there would become more writings about them.
Mm-hmm. And what is that process like? How do you get a historical marker? I mean, what is the process?
Well, the process is that you have to have a willingness to go through the mud because it's a thankless thing. It's kind of difficult to get all your facts together, get it written down, and then apply to the Ohio Historical Society. And every year it seems like they're granting less and less markers because, you know, we have this money situation in the United States of America. So
right.
once you apply, then it has to be funded. This marker happens to have been funded 100% by the descendants of Samuel Gist. It's a very exciting thing. The first marker was, we had help funding it, and the second one we had help funding it. But this has come totally from the pockets of the people who we have enhanced and tried to educate for 10 years. They've heard us. And they have said, we want to be a part of it. And it's really sentimental for me because it's been such a hard sell. And as I said, you have to be willing to just get down in tramping through the mud to me is the way to describe it because it's pretty hard when your feet get muddy to keep walking.
Right.
But we just kept on because we knew it was a worthwhile project. My grandfather used to keep saying, this happened. You need to read about it. My mother said that you've gone to college. Now you need to do some research on this. And it's just been an urging through the years. And I urge my son to do more research on it because there's so much more to find.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of William Steele's William Gist brother, Peter Gist?
Yes. Yes, Leslie has certainly spoken of him well. She was a speaker at one of our guest gatherings and did a fine job. So, yes, we have certainly, and of course, the readings and the writings of William Still will go on
mm-hmm.
forever and will be
mm-hmm.
lifelong that people will be looking at.
Okay. Very interesting. I learned a lot. We're running out of time, and I want you to give us the date and time of the commemorative event one last time.
That will be August the 14th at 12 noon at a little church founded in 1875 called Fairview Church. It's on
mm-hmm.
State Route 68, coming out of Georgetown, coming out of Mount Orb. You can come out of either one. You can get it off out of Cincinnati. You can come in through Portsmouth, Ohio. You can come in through Athens, Ohio. There's several ways to do that. Following this commemoration, we will go to the unveiling of the marker, and then we will come back and have lunch, and then we're going to shuttle people around to different points of interest and show them where this settlement actually was.
Okay, so the party will be at the same place?
The party will be at the same place, yes.
Okay, okay. Is there a phone number where you can be reached or somebody that can give a little bit more information?
513-205-2622. If anyone is interested in any more information, that is 513-205-2622. They can reach me through email, handel 2008 or 2008 at live.com.
Okay, we'll post that on the website. Leslie appreciates it. Thank you for being here with us. This has been the Antique Show, Push Nevada. Thank you very much.
Have a blessed evening. Bye-bye.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
What shall I do?